Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosevall, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today from the Windy City and home of the 1986 Super Bowl champion Chicago Bears is Ann Warren. Ann began her career with Ernst & Young, moved on to the banking industry with Citi, started her career in pricing in 2004 with AT&T. Before starting Price Profitability Advisors earlier this year, she was the Vice President of Pricing Strategy at DirecTV. Ann is a CPA and performed her undergraduate work in accounting at the University of Illinois in beautiful Champaign, Urbana. Ann, it's great to have you on CFO Talk.
Thank you so much.
I love your topic. Pricing is really dear to me. We've had a number of people on that are experts like yourself in the pricing area, and you have so much to teach CFOs. Maybe you can start off with a little primer for us on pricing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. I thought we could spend just a little bit of time talking about what we mean by pricing. I get asked this question quite often, and I like to simplify it into really two major groupings. One is new product pricing or service pricing, and then the other is just your day-to-day pricing process. So what activities do we see in new product pricing? It's really all about the formulation of the initial value proposition to your customer, the product, the design, the features, the benefits, and then all of these other elements on the left-hand side, that goes into your financial business case. And what you often see with more sophisticated companies is once they've completed the business case, they launch the product, and then they may do a post-mortem to assess how did we perform relative to our assumption set. I think where we're going to spend the majority of time today, Steve, is on the day-to-day pricing process. And this is the area where I feel CFOs can really weigh in and help improve their profitability. You have things like price list management or catalog. There's some baseline pricing that you charge in the market. If you're global, you may have FX management. And then you can see here, there's a host of other activities that really take your list price and drive it down into what we call a pocket price. Things like discounting, large customer specific deal pricing. And then the big one here is your financially impacting terms and conditions. That often gets missed, and it's really can be really impactful to your margins. And then certainly bonuses to your customers. And then ultimately, can you bill and implement in concert with the contract terms and conditions? That can also be a strain. Interestingly enough, every company is doing at least some, if not most, of these activities. But what they like to do is improve their performance in order to drive profitability. So if you could flip to the next slide. Thank you. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this particular slide other than I know everyone is very financially astute in your audience, but I want to point out on the bottom left side, the table, you can see here that a 5% price improvement drives not only more contribution dollars, but more contribution margin as well. As a percentage. In order to achieve that same impact, it's 10% more volume, but you're not doing anything to improve your contribution margin percentage. So I often am asked, wait a minute, Ann, I'm looking at this 5% increase in price is definitely going to impact your volume sold. And I say maybe and maybe not. It depends on how elastic your market is. But gaining 10% volume share, in my experience, is very challenging to do. You have capacity issues from a sales force, your marketing engine, your operations teams. So I think it's really important to understand that and just emphasize that point.
I think this is what's really interesting about this, and to interrupt a little bit, is this is so CFO and finance oriented, and it's so high value. Being able to do this analysis, and there is certainly going to be a demand impact on increasing prices, But finding that point, that equilibrium that says the volume lost, you're still going to exceed contribution margin and P&L from this. I love this graph and I love this insight. You can tell you have a CPA background, right?
Thank you. So what's interesting, Steve, about this is the math is relatively straightforward. So that's not the challenge. If we go to the last slide here that I'm going to cover, it really comes down to many influences, and most of them, interestingly enough, you have, of course, external influences, but it's the internal that I think we want to focus a little bit on today, and that is your organization and corporate culture. So who does the pricing today? Has finance ever been involved? Is it a marketing team? Is it entirely your sales force? And so it's very important to understand where you are today in terms of the organization and overall culture. And then when we move into the how and why, that's around the decision-making and the process. So this is things like governance, internal controls from the CFO lens. So that's another area that's really important. And then finally, you have data and tools that empower or improve your capacity for decision-making and process. So I like this slide and this chart because it really simplifies, not that it's a simple thing to do, but it simplifies what are the key areas of influence. And as a CFO, I think it's really important to understand where you are today. And once you start digging into it, what I find with CFOs is they're very astute at understanding process, audit trails, and then they can start to make changes to these three aspects. So that's really all I wanted to cover today as just an overall primer.
We'll call that the CFO pyramid of pricing. It's a really nice map for a CFO to look at each of those and to judge, are we involved in these aspects today? And where can we create more value from our teams by improving in one of those areas of the pyramid? And you talked about governance and internal controls, and certainly that's an easy area for CFOs to show a lot of expertise in their teams. So that's a great place to start. When you think about the few key traits that CFOs should be able to recognize in their pricing teams, whether they're on the lower quartile, the middle quartile, or the upper quartiles, what do you look for in those traits? How can they judge where they fit today?
I know we like to assign grades, but I think of it, Steve, as really a continuum. And so there are a few basic criteria. I'll start with just, do you have a dedicated pricing resource? No matter where it sits in the organization, not a costing resource, a pricing resource, someone that can interface with sales, someone that can make sure that on each deal, certainly the larger deals at least, there's someone there to help the sales teams negotiate with the customers or negotiate with the procurement department. So that's really number one. The second is really understanding and having transparency into your data. And why is that so important? Having prices by customer, by product, by salesperson. What that enables you to do is break things into pure price impact versus maybe product mix implications. And so having transparent data is really important. And that also sets you up for future success if you're going to implement some type of pricing software.
Is there any specific data that you think that companies or we miss that is more important? Do you see it in clients where this is a piece of information that they have accessible, but they don't use, and it's important? Is there any kind of tidbits out there that you can think of? Kind of throw you a curve on that one.
It's not so much that they don't think about it. They think about it, but it's the way in which the data gets presented. Sometimes if you're trying to have a conversation, let's say with your CMO or even your CEO, and you're throwing a great big spreadsheet at them with all this information, which as a finance person, we are fond of doing that, you really need to break it into very specific examples. So think, put your audit hat on maybe and think, okay, I'm going to pull 10 examples or 5 examples and just lay out that information One example that I could give too is almost like a scatter plot. So if you look at, let's say your customers that spend over, I don't know, pick a number, $100,000 a year, and you look at a product breakdown and say, wait a minute, this customer seems to be very similar, at least in spend, to this customer. Why is there such variability in the price points? So being able to slice and dice the data enables you to start asking questions. And so you want to be, of course, careful how you structure your ask, but I'm a big fan of saying what gets measured gets improved. So if you're starting to look at some things and interpret the data, that would be a good place to start.
You talked about this dedicated pricing resource. Are they the ones who are being responsible for the data? Do you see technology, finance? Who do you see making sure that we have one source of truth? Is there a particular group that usually handles that or function, or is it all over the map?
You can have different people pulling information, but the single source of truth really does need to come from finance. Now, how that data gets laid out and interpreted, if you as a pricing person, whether you sit in finance or marketing, if you're able to show the teams that pull that data for you, here's how I use the data that you provided me, then you create trust and credibility. The partnership between pricing, marketing, and finance is absolutely crucial to developing improvement in your pricing strategy.
I love the idea. I don't know if all CFOs are ready for that, but the idea that the finance team, which has probably 70, 60, 70% of the information in the ERPs anyway, it's that other 30 or 40% that we need that somebody else has to come from procurement or comes from marketing or somewhere else in the whole stage of sales funnel. That's where I think we shy away from. And how do we do that? But I think the idea that this single source of truth and that this partnership between marketing and sales and procurement and operations, a whole team, becomes really important to get all the right data. Really appreciate kind of your thoughts on that and your insights. What critical data do we need to capture and analyze that will help our pricing teams become world-class? That's a big question, but you're a big fancy pricing guru, so I can ask that question.
Setting aside the external information is really important as well, right? Having market insights and competitive intelligence, certainly that's not something finance would be responsible for pulling. I think making sure that there's funding for teams to be able to get that objective resource to provide information to say, wait a minute, the sales teams are saying this, but this external source said we should be charging a 10% premium relative to our competitive set. That's really important. But in terms of internal data, it is surprising to me how often there's challenges with this list price to pocket price, getting at that information. I think part of it is just how the accounting systems are working. So as an example, customer bonuses. Sales will perhaps agree to some type of bonus in a contract with a customer. Depending on how sophisticated the audit trail or the governance is, the implementation or the accounting booking, if you will, to use an old school term, doesn't show a clean audit trail. So there's a constant struggle to understand this customer's pricing looks okay. It's up here. It's only maybe 5% less than the list price. We know they're getting a bonus. Where did it get booked? And how do we go back and allocate and make assumptions? So I keep reinforcing this point, but having that, I'll use the term audit trail, having a clean audit trail on your data. And people hear the term data lake and data warehouse. I try not to make it that complicated. Those are important things, but the main point is have a clear understanding and transparency into what you are collecting versus what your price list says. It's surprising, like I said, how you don't see it.
Customer profitability by SKU or by product, or how deep do we have to go to be world-class pricing experts? How deep a level?
Maybe it'll be helpful if we draw, Steve, a comparison to cost accounting. So we have our purchase price variances, our efficiency variances. So if you think about making sure that you have adequate data to be able to differentiate, this customer might be more profitable or have a higher price point than this customer, but they're buying different things. So you have to be able to break it down by customer, by SKU. And certainly if you can make sure as well, you have a salesperson aligned to that transaction. Again, I'm talking more in the B2B space here, but then you can drive accountability and perhaps design incentive programs to give a stretch objective to further improve. It's all about what are the things that I can do to improve my bottom line proactively.
What kind of skills and talents do we need to have a great pricing team?
I think you need financial acumen. Depending on where you are, there's different roles in pricing. You don't necessarily need to be a data scientist, but you need basic financial acumen. And then you also need to have the softer skills. You need to be a good business person. You need to be able to have a conversation with perhaps an engineer or an operations person or legal when we get involved in terms and conditions. Certainly having good rapport with the sales team is crucial. If you are able to effectively collaborate and communicate in a transparent way and also deliver the message. So I've had to really sometimes deliver tough messages. So if I hear a salesperson say something a certain way, I'll say, let's not say that to the CFO. Let's position it differently and vice versa. Be direct, but diplomatic is a real skill. And I've hired people from a variety of disciplines. Really, it comes down to those softer skills.
Yeah, we both know Lynn Gwynn, the pricing strategist at Cargill, and he was on with the CFO talk. You guys think very much alike, having a dedicated pricing. He said 15 years ago, Cargill, this huge organization, didn't have a dedicated pricing group. Now they have over 250 people worldwide that are dedicated to pricing solely. But have you seen a shift towards more companies and smaller companies finding this dedicated pricing specialist?
A little bit of a slow trend, in my opinion, but we have seen more and more pricing go down market. And in particular, with more companies, let's say family-owned companies selling to private equity really likes pricing and profitability, using pricing as a lever to achieve profitability. So I definitely have seen it, but I would still say procurement is probably 10 to 15 years ahead.
In that light, then, what two or three activities or deliverables can finance teams bring to the pricing aspect in businesses that will really be value added?
We keep talking about the clean data really enables an organization to affect change. But also, as a pricing person and having done pricing for many years, it really comes down to the partnership. So I'll give an example, Steve. If you're trying to implement a process that has governance around it. So let's say there was no governance, people were pricing the way they wanted to price. And now you're trying to implement a process where there's review of certain types of deals. Working with finance, what I was able to do and my team was able to do was come up with a process that was both efficient and had governance. What we had to do was standardize a model. We want to make sure, going back to that single source of truth, you have a financial model that has a certain set of assumptions. We're going to use the cost of capital from what finance tells us the cost of capital. We're not going to make up a number in me sitting in marketing as the pricing person. I'm going to work very closely with finance on what are the thresholds. So we're going to build this model together. We're going to use your model as the single source of truth, right? We're going to run it. We're going to know how to run it. We're going to know the model really well, but we're going to co-develop. And you're going to come back to us quarterly. Hey, we've got a new cost of capital. And then we're also going to agree upon a certain set of thresholds. Maybe it's size of deal. So finance says, we want to see any deal that's worth more than $1 million annually or has capital more than $100,000. Whatever it is, establish those thresholds, and the goal should be 80-20 rule. 80%, let it flow through quickly so you're responsive to sales. The 20%, that's really where you want the eyeballs. So this accomplishes a couple things. Number one, you're speedy to market. You need to be, because nothing will kill a change quicker than flowing down that sales funnel. I've seen it happen, and it's really unfortunate. You have to be really strategic about how you put governance in place. So it's balancing efficiency with what do you really need to see, and eliminate this back and forth of what assumption did you use here? And no, we know, because we built the model together. So partnership is the most important.
That takes a lot for finance and accounting leaders and staff. We are sometimes, the CFO can be called the CFNO, right? We're still responsible for governance and custody of assets and making sure that we're a good steward of that. And sometimes that can get away of making quick decisions. So I think that balance you're talking about is really important, and the collaboration and trying to making sure that the sales teams know you're working for them and with them, not against them. Because our tendencies, especially coming out of audit or some of those really restrictive areas of finance and accounting, can be difficult, especially if they've had a bad experience with accounting. They've been knocked on the head too many times. So I love the concept of building partnerships, collaboration, having all that emotional intelligence to deal with those people. That's great. The one thing I'm thinking is, do you see the pricing, this dedicated pricing, does it need to be independent from finance? Did you see that as being an independent function for some of those reasons we were just talking about? It's really an independent function from finance. You wouldn't maybe pull a finance person into it, but they wouldn't report to finance.
I've seen it both ways, and I've actually personally reported into finance organizations or marketing organizations. I think it can work either way, but I think it's really important. You need the right mindset of the CFO to have pricing within the organization. But again, it can work either way. From a pro perspective, having it report into finance, there's more trust and credibility. Oh, you're part of my organization. As long as the person is really collaborative and able to work effectively with their sales partners, it can work. But also being close to the marketing teams, who are also constantly talking to the salespeople, that's a pro on that side.
The finance business partner is a common term now, where getting those skills, those operational communication skills, operational know-how is important. Customer segmentation, it's often referred to as a key in moving from cost plus pricing to value pricing. And how can CFOs help the pricing teams in this area?
Certainly, we don't expect the CFO to do customer segmentation. It goes back to recognizing the value that customer segmentation can bring in terms of objective evaluation. One thing would be the new product pricing. So that first slide that we discussed, where that's half of the two major categories, is I'm a fan of measure twice, cut once. So when you're planning on building a new product and you're going to design it for this market and that market, it's helpful to have an objective resource come in and say, hey, here should be your target market. Here's how much I think you can take of that market. And so making sure that there are either external resources or internal resources, the funding to employ those people, is really worth its weight in gold. Because if you do a business case and you move forward with development and the product flops, then you really are in a position you've sunk capital or other expenditures and you're not getting anything for it.
That's something we sometimes forget, is the financing side of that, where CFOs can be stick in the mud if they're not careful on what your pricing needs get funded, whether that's a dedicated person, whether it's in systems, whether it's in more data capture, whether it's in finding spending for outside data services for the market side, that we look at as, oh, that's just answering, that's just, it's gravy. But sometimes it's pretty fundamental to the price, to doing, becoming a great pricing team.
Just one other quick comment, Steve, is engaging in those discussions. So if not the CFO, maybe having your FP&A person present at these meetings when these things get discussed, and maybe even asking some questions. I think sometimes finance teams don't see the power that they have just by their presence. They're showing their level of engagement. And I think that's huge.
CFOs have lived their careers, certainly in my tenures, below the gross margin line and the balance sheet. And I think there's much more emphasis now on the top line and how CFOs can help in that side. And certainly pricing, as you went out with your CFO pricing pyramid, there's a lot of opportunity there for CFOs and their teams to get involved. So I'm excited about that. Can you close with one or two recommendations on how CFOs and their teams can get started on making a really positive impact on pricing for their companies?
I want to leave the audience here with, don't be afraid if your data is not clean day one. Start with where you're comfortable. Many people, not all people, but many people in finance have that audit background or that discipline. Start with sampling. Sample some customers, some products, some bonuses, some terms and conditions maybe that got approved that you're living with. Do that sampling and then begin to ask questions. And this is, again, another area of comfort, I think, for finance folks. Once you start asking some basic questions and understanding how the process works, then you can say, wait a minute, I see where there might be a gap, a control gap. And so use your strength to your advantage, right? So don't say, oh, I don't know anything about pricing and I'm afraid of it. Don't be afraid. You get in there, you ask some questions. It's, I think you'll find you get comfortable pretty quickly. And then the only other thing I would bring up is the mindset around annual price increases. This is really important to understand. Some years you might do more, some years you might do less, but just as a general discipline and as a project, consider it like your annual budget process. There's a process around doing a price increase. Those two things are worth their weight in gold because you can get a grip on just ongoing discipline as far as increasing your profits through price. And then the other one is really around just good internal controls and governance.
Great points. Great way to finish up. I do know that you just joined a book club to find new outlets for your energy. Do you have a first book you want to tell us about?
The current book I'm reading is called The Wreck. It's very interesting. It's a true story, and it's about people and just trying to get their mind around areas of challenge. And I love inspirational books like that.
And that wraps up today's CFO Talk. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
CFO.University is a community of accounting leaders and companies, trusted advisors, all committed to the professional development of chief financial officers. Learn more about us at CFO.University. Until next time, enjoy, learn, engage. That wraps up today's CFO Talk.